The main focus of our program today is to talk about this really dramatic and rapid development of events in the region we call, I think we should call West Asia. And the best person to go to is Professor Atif Kubursi, Professor Emeritus at McMaster University, and I believe he has joined us now. Are you there, Professor?
Yes, I am, 100%.
Thank you very much for joining us. We're talking about something so shocking, let's put it shocking. It's rapidly developing so that we need two things, I guess, in talking to you. We need the background, but also we're all trying to share what we know. Let me just start it this way. If we were talking 7 days ago, everybody would be saying, well, there's been a peace agreement, a ceasefire with Hezbollah Israel, handled by the United States and France, to be implemented and overseen by the United States. And the question was, and what is going to be the outcome of this? Will it hold? But 7 days have gone by, and we're talking about the attack on Syria coming from the area called Idlib, I think. But I'll leave that to you to tell us where the attack is coming from. I assume there must be some relation between those things. But let's ask you this first. Where is this attack coming from, and who are the who's behind it, and who's participating?
You're absolutely right, Phil. It may be shocking, but it's not surprising, because this situation has been festering for a long time, and there is no way we can dismiss a very causal relationship between the ceasefire in Lebanon and the attack of these two groups. One of them is called al-Nusra, and this has been to a great extent associated with Daesh, with ISIS. Mm-hmm. And the other one is Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. You know, this is the Syrian Free Army, which is basically and fundamentally connected, financed, armed, directed, and organized by Turkey. So to a great extent, one cannot dismiss, no matter what you think about Turkey, Turkey is a NATO member. So there is really quite a bit of concern here that this is a NATO operation. And ISIS, to a great extent, despite all its extreme position things, even at one time, Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, had bragged that they have used it, found it, and to a great extent directed it. So what we really have here is a situation where NATO, United States primarily, Turkey in cahoots, and Israel in the background, if not directly, because to some extent, Israel has been attacking all the areas that have emptied, that would have cleared them for this onslaught and this surprise attack on Aleppo, and now going even to Hama. So to a great extent, this is not a coincidental. This is exploiting, taking advantage of the ceasefire in Lebanon and the weakening of Hezbollah and the weakening of the Iranian connection and the what we call the resistance axis. Mm-hmm. So to a great extent, this is an attempt on the part of NATO, the United States, Turkey, and others to change the situation in Syria, weaken the Syrian beyond what they have been weakened, in the absence of a credible support in the past that had helped Syria, whether it's from Hezbollah or from Iran. So there is no way here you can dismiss the NATO objective of changing the situation in Syria and exploiting the ceasefire, exploiting the consequences of the Israeli unleashing one of the most vicious attacks on Lebanon, and also to separate and exploit the separation of what the resistance axis thought that they have united the arenas, so to speak, and now they were successful in Lebanon to separate Lebanon from Gaza, and now they won't basically separate Lebanon from Syria and separate Syria from its the group that supported it.
It is releasing a new kind of dynamic. It looks like the big players who've been in the shadows are coming forward. And it's probably, I'll ask you, it just has to do with the resistance has been linked to the fact that Russia has stopped being, long since now, cooperating with a kind of NATO-dominated Europe. They've decided that there's got to be an end put to that because it's a threat to their existence. And this is moving all the other players around. It's like large pieces crushing small, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, there is no way you can dismiss the intersection of Syria and Russia. And this is not as much only an attack on Syria. It's also, in an indirect way, an attack on Russia. And to some extent, maybe tit for tat for Russian successes with the Ukrainian front. And now they're opening this as a diversionary and to preoccupy Russia and to expose Russia to greater pressures and threats. So the intersection between the Ukrainian war and the Russia and Syria is there, and the commonality is the Russian Syrian connection. Russia has a military base in one in the port city of Latakia, and they also have an air base which is not very far from Latakia too, so Hanaim. So to a great extent here, the rebels are saying, oh, we're not going to attack Russia and we have nothing against Russia at the moment, as if this is going to be believed, that we are only attacking the regime of Assad in Syria. So this is not really credible. There is no way here with the U.S. bombing and continuously bombing and presumably also providing air support to the attack, that this is not meant to weaken, embarrass, and create a diversionary action against Russia.
There's an element, there are so many, but I recall when the first time they did this, when they overran, in I guess it was 2011, they captured Aleppo. I believe at that time, Hillary Clinton was the Secretary of State of the United U.S., and she was immediately calling, and this was alarmed many people. She said, we have to control the airspace. Well, they haven't been able to do that because Syria is a sovereign state, and it has some air power, and of course the Russians have secured that for the most part. But it's a different type of war because Syria is an army with air cover. There's nobody else fighting in that area that has any air cover, which is one of the reasons they're on the back foot, right?
You're absolutely right. I mean, with the Russian Air Force there and their willingness to shore up Assad has provided a major support for him. And as you said, probably is the only country in the region with any air support, air cover that is standing up to Israel and the Americans. So in a great extent here, there is really a connection to the NATO-US in the following sense. Syria has not succumbed to pressures and dictates from Ankara, from Turkey. Mm-hmm. And Turkey, no matter how much they speak loudly about their support of their brethren and co-religionists in the region, have really been a NATO base. In Sirklik, which is the American NATO base in Turkey, has been definitely with the acquiescence of the Turks and have really been supported by the Turks. And what really is clear here is that this is an attempt on the part of Turkey to lay down its influence on the future of Syria. And by proxy, the influence of the Americans, and to diminish and dilute any influence of Iran in the region. Hmm. So this is not a local area type of invasion. This is an international one. It has connections to the Israeli war on Lebanon, Gaza. It has, and the Palestinians, it has connection to the Ukrainian war. It is connected to the tug of war between NATO and supporting Arab countries and the primarily Iranian situation.
Yeah, which is also a little obscure at the moment. As to what each of them wants, and what's striking is that how much the U.S. has captured the control of all these things. When we've been having for almost a year now talk about ceasefire, and the only office that gets to make definitive statements is the United States. They would tell us, oh, well, we're getting close. We're unfortunately, Hamas is too stubborn, and the process has been the U.S. is the one who's controlling the talks. The people associated with it, Qatar, Egypt, these are all very much under the U.S. thumb. So you know that the outcome is probably not going to be very rosy. And then we have these current ones, this situation with Hezbollah. Again, the Americans say they will be the guarantors, and I forget the word, but basically the ones who will check on progress is going to be the United States. How could this, let's put it this way, how could that ever work?
There is a general consensus in the region, and is expressed in the local press that this is all America motivated, coordinated, supported, and the outcome has been a greater role and a reweaving of the domination of the United States of the region. And proxies here would be Turkey, would be Israel, would be Arab-supporting regime, but there is no way one can dismiss the heavy hand and the attempt of the Americans to remain the exclusive arbiter of what happens in the region. And the last ceasefire that came in Lebanon, it's the Americans who would supervise.
Which is, by the way, being violated, is it not, by Israel? They are bombing people, threatening and firing at people who are trying to return to their homes.
Yeah, absolutely. And with the complete support of the U.S., I mean, U.S. just came back and said, Israel has every right to protect itself Well, I mean, I don't know how people going to their homes going to threaten Israel.
Doesn't a person have a home have a right to defend his home?
No. Israel has the right to defend itself. Going to your home, that's like major travesty and threat to peace.
Yes. We're talking to Professor Atif Kaboursi, who knows this country and territory like the back of his hand. I want to ask you, there is something curious. When this happened, when these terrorists, al-Qaeda types, were operating in 2011 and through several years, a move was made to remove Syria from the Arab League. But now on this occasion, they are saying that they support Syria, at least they say that rhetorically, minimally, but Qatar did not. Does this reveal something to us about what's going on?
Yeah, absolutely, it does. You see, there is quite a bit of talk and rhetoric, but there is no real, action on the ground that would really support Syria. And look, there is even a very troubling situation in which Syria feels that it has some connections to UAE, but UAE is totally now, despite all what Israel has done, the genocidal war, the incredible violation of the human rights of the Palestinians, and, the famine that has been perpetrated and unwillingness of the Israelis to allow aid to reach the poor people, particularly in northern Gaza, but everywhere in Gaza. Mm-hmm. And the situation has started, if one can remember, it was Qatar was trying to literally take over Syria. They wanted to provide a pipeline of gas and oil, but particularly gas, to Europe that would have really had to pass through Syria, and Syria has refused. And the Americans and everybody were very much interested in this pipeline, trying to substitute the dependence of Europe on Nord Stream, the Russian gas. Mm-hmm. And when Syria really stood in its face, that was the basic and the greatest motivation of why people wanted to overrun Syria. And maybe there is now a revival of that plan. And they see an opportunity now that Russia is involved in Ukraine. Iran has been weakened. Hezbollah has been pushed back and unable to support Syria and had to withdraw whatever forces they had in Syria. And with the presence of the Americans in Syria and using the Air Force and the Israeli bombing to make it a smooth, they cleared the way for the ISIS and the Free Syrian Army, who are really basically and fundamentally mercenaries for Turkey and for the U.S., to have a free passage, so to speak, all the way to Aleppo, and God knows where they're going from there.
Mm-hmm. On that point of the pipeline, we spoke to you some weeks back, and that was stressed Netanyahu stood in front of the United Nations and showed him the map. And he said, this is the future. Of course, people despise the way he does things and what he is, but he wasn't hiding the project. And could you talk about this? Qatar is basically a U.S. military installation, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. They have the biggest air base in the region, if not in the world. And despite all the rhetoric from Qatar and their support for Hamas and for other things, Qatar has really towed the line with the U.S. and is serving primarily the interests of the empire, so to speak. feet to dominate the region. And Qatar really wants to sell its gas and to replace the Russian gas. And this has really been directed, organized, promoted, and pushed by the Americans. So there is really here a situation, and you can see this now. There is one way one would see. I am one of the people, I'm sure many have felt like, you know, Jazeera was a organization that were really exposing the genocidal war and this. And now look, Qatar and its mouthpiece, the Jazeera, are going full-fledged support for the invasion of Syria.
Yes, there's been remarks on how rapidly they flipped over and we're back to the old narrative of the noble white helmets and the rebellion of the population of Syria, which is all a fairy tale. Something should be underlined. I'd like you to talk about it. Is Syria has been, and the word is pillar, a pillar. All the time that everybody's been talking about Palestine and Iran and Lebanon, the government, the only government in the region that never accepted the Israeli occupation, of course, of the Golan Heights, but also Israeli occupation of Palestinian territories, was Syria. And it's a secular government that is nominally, I don't know how this works on the, in reality, but it is a declared socialist government. So here we are with people who claim to be concerned about militant Islam trying to destroy a secular government and one that has maintained its sovereignty since the time that it was established, right?
Yeah. I mean, Ehud Olmert, the ex-prime minister of Israel, and, Ehud Barak, they said very bluntly at one time that we told and we communicated to the Syrians that abandon your support for the Palestinians and you could rule Syria forever. I mean, to a great extent, what was really happening here is Syria has presented a situation where it was not willing. This is an Arab country that has opposed and has stood in the face of the Israeli and American attempt to create an unjust peace and to remove the Palestinian situation from any recognition or any support. So, to a great extent, Syria is paying the price for being on the side of the Palestinians and unwillingness to accept a Israeli hegemony and an American exclusive control of the Middle East.
Speaking of this point about the secular, it is a state in which you have many ethnic groups, national groups, Armenians, others, and Syria has always protected the Christian population. I can recall, and I don't know why, maybe I do know why, this has been forgotten. But when the U.S. was knocked over the government of Saddam Hussein in Iraq, and they encouraged Islamic elements they unleashed them against who would target Christians as enemies. The Christian, Iraqi Christians, most of them went to Syria, where they were accepted and protected. It's linked to this in my mind. Now we have a situation where Iraq, there are militias, and I want to know if you know if this is true, but I understand that as many as 25,000 fighters are coming from Iraq to help Syria. Is there any truth in that? And what about this matter of dividing people by religion as a tactic?
Okay, you're raising some very interesting points. So let me begin with the first one. Syria is a secular state. And most people would not know, at one time, the president of the Republic of Syria was a Christian. And there is a really important Christian community, especially the Orthodox religion, the Patriarch headquarter in Saidnaya, which is close to Damascus, is the major and the seat of Eastern Orthodox Christianity. There is no way we can underestimate that Syria has protected and has given very equal and strong voice for its Christian community in Syria, unlike any other maybe Arab country, except maybe Lebanon. But to a great extent, the Syrians in Syria feel protected, feel safe, and do not feel excluded from any position they can. So this is an established fact that there is no way one can underestimate or not appreciate the very fact that the Syria, whether this regime or the previous ones or whichever one, Syria as a secular state has always been able to protect its minority Christian and has given them equal rights. And in many respects, some people have given them more rights than they've had in many other countries in the region, not even excluding Lebanon. So that's a fact. The second point that is really important here is the fact that there are now concerns that, incredible concerns, that if Syria was to fall to these extreme religious groups, and basically serving external influences for Turkey, NATO, and others, Iraq would be threatened. And some people, even the Kurds, must be now on edge, feeling that if Turkey has its way, God knows what they will do with them. And the United States is sitting right in that region. And this is what a dimension that we should talk about. There is talk, and there has been some commotion suggesting that when Trump is likely to assume office, he is likely to pull the American forces from Syria. He does not want to be embroiled in these festering areas. It looks like as if Biden is trying to really instigate a situation where it would become more difficult for Trump to bring about the end of the Ukrainian war and other wars. And this is one way of literally creating facts and situations where America is unable to easily extricate itself from this region.
And is it your opinion, do you know, are the Iraqi fighters going to Syria? Have you heard that?
Yeah, I would not be surprised. I mean, because they know they're next. Because the...
They told the United States to leave, and of course the United States has not gone anywhere. They're like in Guantanamo, Cuba. The government says go, and they don't go.
Yeah, exactly. But you see, the interesting thing here is that, as you know, Iraq was fighting a very, vicious and bloody war with ISIS and have, to a great extent, been successful in pushing out the ISIS forces into enclaves and things that seem to be protected by the Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel that if Syria is the front end of this fight with ISIS and these extremist groups, and if Syria were to fall, Iraq would be next. So these people fighting with Syria are fighting for their survival too. And I would not be surprised they're sending 25, maybe too small a number. They must be sending much more.
Mm-hmm. Just in terms of what is immediately happening there, I'm seeing reports. I notice the Western media is giddy with the idea that we're going to have a replay of 2011. But actually, the fighters don't seem to have had that much success. They're talking about Aleppo overrun. But as you know, depending on how many troops you have, how much preparation, it's very hard to hold on to a position unless somebody's going to come in behind you, somebody big. What about these reports of situation? Are you following close enough? Are you getting a picture of success or degree of success of the against Aleppo by the terrorists?
I'm following it, and I have friends here who come from Aleppo, and they're trying as much as we can to get a true picture. First, there is an exaggeration of the success of the rebels. There is also an underestimation that the Syrians are going to regroup, and with their supporters, they're going to mount a counteroffensive. And there is really a lack of appreciation of the fact that the Syrians are not fighting the rebels. They're fighting Turkey. They're fighting NATO. They're fighting the United States. They're fighting Israel. There is really room to have reform in Syria and for the parties to come. But this is not the way to do it. I mean, this is a situation in which they want to impose, and they had showed some willingness. And as you know, the Russians have established a Istana and got the Syrians and the Turks and the Iranians and everybody to talk. And there were some grounds that they have developed. Grounds for agreement on things. This is a major violation. And to a great extent, this is basically and fundamentally an attempt of the Turks and NATO and the United States and Israel. And there is no way you can dismiss the connection that the minute Israel really stopped its onslaught on Lebanon, that this had begun, that there is no real here coordination between Turkey, Israel, NATO, the U.S. In their attack on Syria.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, when NATO is spoken of, it defines itself as defensive. Actually, it's quite an aggressive, increasingly aggressive. It now sees itself as global, whereas the old lie was that they were protecting the North Atlantic area from the communists, who have long since passed away, but here they are operating with. They seem to have a global tactic at the moment. And may as well mention that China is watching this very closely because many of the fighters of this so-called this Al Qaeda number two Al Qaeda phenomena. Many of them are Uyghur elements that have been cultivated and financed by Turkey.
Yes.
So China must be wondering, is there some kind of plan to come back after them? Because they unleashed, people forget, a horrendous attack in Western China, and they called themselves Turks, and they wrecked havoc. They used basically Al-Qaeda tactics, just get in a truck and run over people, that kind of thing. So China tends to sit back and watch and very strategic, but they have a growing immediate interest in what's going on here, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are three issues here, and you have really covered them all. One, this is not a local conflict. This is has international connections every which way you look at them, whether it's the Ukrainian war, the Russians, and NATO versus this, and by extension to the possible conflicts with China. If anybody has any doubt about the aggressiveness of NATO, you only have to consider what were the conditions and what happened to provoke the Ukrainian thing. I mean, there was an agreement and was accepted generally. that NATO would not push east, and they went. And they went to the border of Russia, and they were basically pushing the Russians in so many ways, provoking what one cannot dismiss the Ukrainian crisis. So aggressiveness of NATO cannot be dismissed and has been a major instigating factor in the way the Russians have, you know, we sleepwalking towards a third world war, and there is no way you can dismiss this conflict expanding. All of a sudden, now every country on the border of Russia has to be a member of NATO. And NATO's raison d'etre is a conflict. And, you know, it's a military alliance. And military alliance against what? I mean, if I was a Chinese or Russian, I would be worried. No question about it. So that dimension is there. The second dimension that is really important here is that being an international conflict, and to a great extent, we're basically seeing the U.S. Reorganizing things, reconstituting, and reasserting its dominance on so many areas. And as you know, to a great extent, the BRICS, all these developments have really worked towards diminishing or denying the Americans the exclusive arbiter and decision and domination. Mm-hmm. So to a great extent, no one can see any single event happening in the world without looking at the ramification of this that would bring together a perspective of conflict between China, Russia, BRICS, and NATO and Western American domination.
Yeah. Well, Professor Kiburcsi, we are very fortunate to have you to tell us these details. This is something we want to follow closely. We hope we can talk to you over the coming weeks, because something rather large is going on that we need this kind of perspective. Thank you very, very much for joining us.
Thank you, Phil. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tater Report, CIUT, 89.5 FM. I would say put that interview, we will be putting it on our Facebook, but I would review it by anybody who really wants a grasp, because this is, as the professor said, a large issue. This is now starting to involve major capitals, nuclear powers, and they are not happy with each other. And if you're a middle power, Canada claims to be one, they show their middle power by saying yes, 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 to anything that you, our presidents, whatever party they might be from, tell us to do. But there are middle powers who are having to scramble. And that came to very much to light in that interview. We're going to take a brief break, and we'll be back to talk to Norman Otis Richmond.